What is happening, gang? We are live on the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Polian. And in today's episode, we get to do something super duper fun that you don't often get to do in life. You get to understand the draft management process from an NFL Hall of Fame GM's perspective. This is truly a unique window into Bill's brain in terms of how the draft was actually run, in terms of how was the board put together? How do you actually manage some of the draft process in terms of, you know, what do you do on draft day? What are some of the moves that you make? What do you have prepped before you get into that draft process? What are some decisions that you might have in place? And then ultimately, you know, what happens when there are sort of star player trades that happen throughout the course of the draft? I mean, this is obviously a super duper hot topic in this current offseason, with seemingly every player wanting to be on the move headed into this draft. And Bill was involved in some of the sort of more mega draft trades of all time around the draft in terms of some superstar players moving, and namely the Marshall Faulk deal. So this is a really, really unique window into kind of Bill's mindset as to how the draft process should truly be managed, how he would set it up, and what is that draft day management process truly, truly like. But before we dive into today's show, I want to take a minute and talk about one of our favorite sponsors on the pod, Bet Online. Our partners at BetOnline continue to be the number one trusted source for all your betting needs and sports info. Find all the latest sports developments, including updated odds on the NBA playoffs. The playoffs are getting crazy. Fights and even next season futures. Next season futures might be a little tough with some of these players on the move. And don't forget that the MLB is back. Who are you picking to win the World Series this year? BetOnline is your continued source for all your sports wagering needs, including live betting and your favorite Vegas casino and poker games. It's super easy to get started. Head to the website today or use your mobile device to join and use promo code BELIEVE. That's promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Again, head over to the website or use your mobile device and use promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, to get your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Bet online where the game starts. All right, guys, this is the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Polian, and this is our look at draft management in the NFL. All right, what is happening, gang? We are live. The draft is a mere few days away. It's probably my favorite time of year. Not Christmas, not Thanksgiving. It is draft season. Rick, where are we headed on the show today?
Well, let's start off with something you really never hear anybody in the draft industrial complex talk about, which is the real purpose of the draft. Certainly, you know, the draft is there to bring parity, to equalize talent, yes. But the real purpose of the draft is salary suppression. The real purpose of the draft is to deny players, just like standard player contracts and waivers and free agency restrictions on veterans as they exist or existed, to deny the player the opportunity to go to all 32 teams and say, what will you give me? What will you give me? What will you give me? And to have his rights vested in one team and one team only. And therefore, in the end, it is a take it or leave it offer. That's why the draft was created. That's why the draft exists. And you got to take it from there. Am I wrong, Bill?
No, you're not wrong. Small disagreement here, which is just agent versus GM. I think it was 1937 when Burt Bell, who was one of the founding fathers of the NFL, the modern NFL, sort of invented the draft. And the reason for that was not salary suppression, because Jay Berwanger from the University of Chicago, who was the first draft choice that year,
and the first Heisman Award winner.
Yeah, elected not to play because the salary offer was so low. There was no, the NFL didn't have any money in those days. So salary suppression was not the issue. The issue was what was competitive balance, and making sure that everybody had a shot at, you know, starting with the weakest teams, had a shot at the best players. That was really how it developed. And then, of course, as we got into the modern era, with the humongous amount of money, and I'm going back into the 70s now, humongous amount of money paid to draft choices, especially the number one guy. Then salary suppression became a major issue. And it finally came to fruition. It was the prayer of George Young and myself and Jim Irsay and Steve Gutman when we did the original salary cap. The union Gene Upshaw wouldn't give it to us. And we took a lot of bullets going up that hill. So when Roger Goodell finally got the rookie cap installed in 11, I was leading the parade of those applauding because it had become not salary suppression, but an inflationary issue that was beyond belief. And we, you know, because you're never going to be right in the draft. 50% of the guys that drafted fail. And so you're paying money, you know, to people who are not playing for you. That makes no sense at all. So that's where we are right now. But the important thing to remember and what we really want fans to focus on is not what you hear on television, the rankings of everybody 1 to 336. That's not the purpose of the draft. The purpose of the draft is twofold. One, to make sure that the weakest teams have a shot early in the draft in every round at the best players. And B, that each team can draft the players that help it to win. That's the purpose. It's not to get the first round right, which is what all the media people pride themselves on doing. They pat themselves on the back when they get close to having the guys that are picked in the first round right. They can't possibly discern where they're going to go, but that's foolishness. That's not what the draft is about. And if you're upset because your team didn't take a player that someone on television liked, don't be upset. The people on television only know 40% of what there is to know.
Well, so, every player is great. I mean, for those 3 days, it's a home run.
Yeah, for sure.
Let's just debunk some myths right off the top of that.
Yeah. How about the one about this guy's stock is rising? Talk about that.
Let's don't go there yet. There are more important things.
All right. I hate that one.
So do I, but there are more important things. Number one, the players drafted next week will not help the teams that drafted them appreciably in their first years. That's a fact. Only about 10% of draftees have any real effect on winning in their rookie years. They're rookies. They can't find their way to the cafeteria. They don't know their way to the meeting room, much less be able to come in and, quote, dominate, close quote, in the NFL. They're not going to do it. And so, you know, by midseason, if the number one pick is in the lineup and he's learning and he's developing, and by the end of the season, the arrow is up, Trevor Lawrence as an example, that's wonderful. Don't expect anything more and don't believe anything more. Secondly, people dominating. This guy is going to dominate in the National Football League. It's no question about it. Who said that about Aaron Donald? One guy. You're listening to him. No one else had him picked as the dominant player that he's become. They liked him as a first round draft choice, but he's too small. Okay. So, and I'm not the only one. There were other people, by the way. But the point I'm making is that very few people understand both the player's talent and fit. And the reason is very, very few people who talk on television watch film. They listen to what others say. You've heard of the circular firing squad?
Yeah.
The draft industrial complex is a revolving echo chamber. don't get excited about that. Finally, we talk about dominant players, right? Baker Mayfield was number one in the draft, first player taken. He was going to dominate. He had the it factor. He was a great pick, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Not the same year, but earlier. Russell Wilson was drafted in the third round, and a famous commentator famously said, "You can't draft Russell Wilson in the third round."
Yeah.
My response was, I wasn't aware there was a rule that said that.
That was the 11th commandment.
Or the fact that it had actually just happened, even though you can't do it.
I must have been out of the room when the competition committee passed that. But in any event, Russell obviously is an outstanding and dominant player, and so is our tackle from the Rams, and he may in the end be among the best of all time if he plays, you know, 4 or 5 more years at a high level. He's already a Hall of Famer, I think, but we're talking about now the best of the best of all time, Aaron Donald, and no one had him as a dominator. So that's not to say that the people on television are ignorant. They're not. They work hard at their craft, but they don't have access to the information that general managers do. And having said that, general managers get it wrong a lot.
Yeah.
Ron Wolf and I have both stated publicly on numerous occasions, if you bat 565 out of 1,000 in the draft, you're going to the playoffs pretty much every year.
Mm-hmm.
So no one can predict with any degree of certainty who's going to be good and who's going to be great. Only time will tell. What we're trying to do is draft players who will help our team. And to reiterate that point, underscore that point, I was asked by Jim Irsay when Ryan Leaf and Peyton Manning were coming out, what do we have with these two guys? Give me the upside and the downside. I said, well, with Ryan, the downside, if we hit on him, we got a pretty athletic, pretty talented quarterback who's got a lot to learn.
All right, before we continue diving deeper into the draft management process, I wanted to talk about one of my favorite sponsors and also one of the things I've truly enjoyed doing more than anything else this last year, and that is playing Dynasty Owner. Do you love fantasy sports? Are you looking for a new challenge this year? And let me tell you, it is a challenge. Dynasty Owner is the new way to play fantasy football with real NFL salaries, adding the strategy of running an actual franchise. And this is sort of an interesting time for those of us who are currently in our Dynasty Owner leagues, as we've just had to get under the salary cap as the draft is upon us. This is a really fun, complicated time in the game. And so what's super fun about this from a fantasy perspective is literally it's like you're experiencing some of the same challenges that GMs are facing headed into the draft, and obviously with June 1st looming in front of us. Dynasty Owner provides a unique and challenging experience that will test your skills as an owner and general manager. You'll have complete control over your team's future year over year, so you got to think about what contracts people are going to be getting moving into the future. You can build through the draft, make trades, sign free agents, and manage your team's salary cap. Can you create the dynasty of champions? Hey, maybe. I think we're going to be dynasty champions this year. We're going for the ring on the pod, so look out. But hey, if you want to compete with us, sign up today at dynastyowner.com and start building your dynasty right now.
If what we're hearing about his maturity is correct, then it's a total bust. It's a disaster. We've blown the pick, and we have nothing to show for it. In Peyton, if we hit, we're going to have a very good quarterback who, if we surround him with talent, has a chance to lead us to the promised land. If we miss, the worst we get is Bernie Kosar. So that's me actually describing the choice. The choice was clear. It was Peyton Manning. Did I ever utter the words Hall of Fame? Never.
No
one can predict that. As Dave Gettleman said when he drafted Saquon Barkley, you hope that you're drafting a guy in the top 10 who has a chance to get a gold jacket. That's what you hope. But you can never, ever, ever predict it. So this is far, far from an exact science. Even though we apply a great deal of time and effort and money to it. And secondly, the gurus only have about 45% of the information that general managers have. And the other 55% that the general managers have is what's really dispositive. So take what's said with a grain of salt, hope that your team does well, and remember that all your general manager, the guy you're rooting for, the guy you want to hit a home run on draft day, all he cares about is your team. He doesn't give a damn who anybody else drafted.
Right.
What he's looking at is,
and
you know, who am I drafting to help our team?
And be happy if you get Bernie Kosar.
Exactly.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Sure.
Absolutely.
So Bill, in terms of kind of draft management, I mean, this is something I've always wanted to kind of ask you about. Where did you enjoy, or did you enjoy drafting? Because you drafted sort of all over the place. I mean, you drafted first overall, you drafted later in the first round. Where in the draft, in terms of round positioning, did you enjoy operating from the most?
It really didn't matter. You know, wherever we were, that's what we were going to deal with. So it wasn't a question of saying, well, I'd rather be 10th or I'd rather be 15th than 29th. I'd rather be 32nd, to be honest with you. You know, so it didn't matter. It was just a function of what can we do to maximize the opportunity to get a really good player that's going to help our team. Which allows me to segue into the other myth that needs to be dealt with. There is a myth created by the analytics people that the more choices you have in the seven rounds, the better chance you have to get good players. Well, first of all, that's completely debunked simply by Baker Mayfield. The Browns tanked to get Baker Mayfield. Whether that's proven by Mary Jo White in the investigation or not is immaterial. We all know they tanked. And they took Baker Mayfield, who failed. So it's not about the number of choices you have. It's about who's doing the choosing and whom they choose. It's not about mathematics. Also, 70% of the players who contribute to winning, this is a statistic that is up to date today, validated again today. 70% of the players who contribute to winning, meaning they're red and blue purple players, come from the first three rounds. And more collegiate free agents, meaning undrafted players who are signed after the draft, become contributors than do all the players from rounds 4 to 7 combined. Mm-hmm. When you go through every roster.
Why do you think that is, Bill?
Why? Because, first of all, we're not soothsayers. We can't predict who among players with flaws from 4 to 7, they all have flaws, will overcome those flaws in the National Football League. Secondly, there are teams that don't take system fit into consideration, and they draft players who don't fit their system. And so those guys don't have an opportunity to succeed, and they fail, and they oftentimes don't get a second chance. And then finally, if you draft 7 players and you sign 25 free agents, the odds are pretty good.
Yeah.
That you're going to get a free agent or two who can help you.
Yeah.
In fact, in the
80s, and I know we've discussed this, you know, not on the show, the sophistication changed and so on. But I know when I was at the Players Association, we kept statistical on this. There were more free agents, and this was the Pro Bowl when the players were voting on the Pro Bowl, so it mattered. There were more free agents who wound up in the Pro Bowl than there were first round draft picks.
Yes, absolutely. Sure. So, you know, it's an inexact science. That's the point. No one can predict. And I'll finish with this part of it. The two things that don't exist: value for the pick and a reach. First of all, the only value for the pick is who you pick.
Right.
Is he good or is he not? It doesn't matter what someone else said about what that should, who should be taken at that pick. No one can predict who's going to, they could have had him in the third round. No way. How do you know? You don't have a crystal right. ball.
That's right.
That's absurd.
Yeah. Of course you should have bought Google.
I'd rather take the player around too early than around too late and miss on it. So therefore, there is no such thing as a reach. There is no such thing as a reach. There is only the perception of the gurus. Oh, I didn't have him ranked that high, so therefore it's a reach.
Yeah,
it's not a reach. The team that took him has a conviction on him. We'll see in the final analysis if that team was right or wrong. But maybe that team is saying, I'd rather take this guy, i.e. Robert Mathis, around too early than around too late.
Yeah.
Because if I lose him
right.
and I have a conviction on him, I can't predict that anybody else will not take him and sit there and allow us to sweat
it out.
Where the gurus say it should be. No, that's not the way it works.
Exactly. I mean, that's the other part they never.
Those statements are inadmissible on their face. They're false.
Exactly. I mean, that's the other part they never talk about. The strategy of trying to figure out where you can get what you want before somebody else gets to that ahead of you. I mean, they completely ignore that. They act like they're drafting in a vacuum.
That's correct, because they are. They are. They don't have any concern about getting a particular player at on your team. They're only 1 to 336. That's not how we rank them anyway. We don't rank players that way. We rank them by round horizontally. The board consists of they finally, there have been enough people like Mike Tannenbaum and Rex Ryan and myself that worked on television. They finally recognized that the board's horizontal and not vertical. But they still, they're still gurus that say, oh, this is my best available. These guys are, they should be taken here soon.
I can't believe it.
I don't know.
It makes for an exciting TV show.
It does.
But what the point I want to make here, and hey, those guys are good guys, and they're, God bless them, they're making a living, and they entertain people, and it's wonderful. But what fans need to understand is, don't get mad at GM if he took Robert Mathis that you never heard of.
Right.
Yeah.
Because he's heard of him.
That's all that matters.
He has a conviction.
Exactly. So, Bill, we got about a minute left in this segment. Can you give me a quick thing on the guy's stock is rising, the guy's stock is falling?
Well, there's no such thing, because the boards are closed up 2 weeks ago, really, when it's all said and done. And you, first of all, you would never, at least in my experience, you would never raise a guy more than a round anyway. That's ridiculous. The idea that no one knew this guy 3 weeks ago and now he's in the second round. No, the gurus didn't know him.
Yeah.
The GMs did.
So real quick, in this phase, when your board's locked, what are you doing in these 2 weeks?
Draft management, cleaning up odds and ends, security, character, medical, which is very, all three are very important, and psychological, and then draft management, getting ready to, as Rick said, plot all the moves that you want to make in order to get to as many of the players that you want to draft as you can.
Tons of people take multivitamins, but it's important to choose one that is top quality. With one delicious scoop of Athletic Greens, you're absorbing 75 high-quality vitamins, minerals, superfoods, probiotics, and adaptogens to start your day right. Their special blend of ingredients, which is awesome, by the way, supports gut health, your nervous system, your immune system, energy, recovery, focus, and aging. It's also lifestyle friendly and fits to a wide range of diets. There's only 1 gram of sugar and no chemicals or artificial anything. Reclaim your health and arm your immune system with convenient daily nutrition. It's just one scoop and a cup of water every day, and that is it. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and five free free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/believe. That's believe, B-L-E-A-V. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/believe. You're gonna love it. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. These products are not intended to diagnose, treat, or cure or prevent any disease. All right, Bill. So one of the myths that I think we need to debunk that I've heard literally in every draft podcast show that I've heard this year, in large part in reference to what I think the Commanders fans want us to do at 11, is this concept of positional value, meaning that there's certain positions that you should take higher in the draft for salary cap reasons or the value that they have from an analytics perspective. What are your thoughts on positional value? And I have a hunch you're about ready to debunk it.
Well, I'll debunk it to a certain degree. When you're up high in the draft in the top 10, Commanders are at 11. So, okay, that's close enough, I guess. What you're looking for is someone who scores or throws touchdowns, quarterback or running back, wide receiver, someone who can sack the quarterback, defensive end or Aaron Donald type defensive tackle, someone who can turn the ball over, i.e. corner, safety, or someone at another position, hopefully three down linebacker, or perhaps offensive guard, who can dominate, and absent that, left tackle. So that pretty much covers the waterfront.
Yeah.
What's not available to you are two down linebackers, guards, and non-dominant centers, although non-dominant centers, wherever you draft them, they play awfully well if they have all the other characteristics. But in the old days, positional value vis-a-vis salary was a real impediment to drafting anybody but dominant players. Lawrence Taylor, for example, a linebacker, okay. Rushman, okay. Otherwise, because of what they got paid, the Kings, they got paid each year. They were the top 10 players or top five players with the highest paid players at their position in the league, including veterans.
Yeah.
So that was the inflationary effect that Gene Upshaw believed in. So you couldn't take a tight end there. You couldn't take a two down, even a three down linebacker there. You couldn't possibly take a guard there unless you were absolutely sure he was going to be John Hanna, you know. So once the rookie salaries scale came in, it absolutely did away with the positional value issue, because now the price, A, for failure, and B, if you succeed, is not outrageous.
Yeah.
Now, the reason people talk about positional value now is because of the second contract. So if you draft an offensive lineman, let's say, or an offensive tackle who turns out to be a guard, Leatherwood, okay?
Yep.
You draft him with the sixth or seventh pick in the draft. When it comes time for him to get paid and go on the franchise tag, if necessary, it's going to be a king's ransom. So, you know, maybe you'd rather not have that, but that's 5 years down the road for first rounders.
Yeah, exactly.
Their careers might be over by then.
Yeah.
And more importantly, you might be fired by then.
Right, exactly.
So why would you even think about that? If the guy deserves to be in the top five or the top 10, by God, pick him.
Yeah,
right.
You can't ever have enough good football players.
So to that point, kind of thinking through sort of, and we talked about this a little bit before we got on air, but, you know, it seems to me this draft is a little interesting in the sense that there obviously isn't a huge consensus at the top in terms of the DIC. So it's going to make for a really good TV event. But you do have a lot of these receivers who seemingly are requesting to be traded, want to be traded, who from the 2018 draft, you had the 4 second-round picks who've turned out to be pretty good in Brown, Metcalf, McLaurin, and Debo. How does that affect you from a draft management perspective? So if you're a GM, you know receivers a position of need you want to fill maybe in the first round. Knowing some of these guys are available, does that affect you at all in terms of how you look at the draft, or are you more likely to be working the phones in the weeks leading up to it? How would that impact how you would prepare for a draft like this, or would it?
Well, it does, but only peripherally. If any of those four players were available, And I suspect only, Debo has said he wants to be traded. That doesn't mean the Fort John's going to trade him.
Yeah. Well, and AJ Brown has done the, which I'm sure you would have loved in your day, the social media scrubbing of all of his Titans information.
Yeah. I'm not on social media, so I wouldn't have known about it anyway.
That's right. Bill has actually scrubbed all the social media.
I would have
world.
Paid money to see someone come into your office and say, Bill, we've got a huge problem. Such and such player has scrubbed their social media. And you'd be like, what?
What?
Excuse me? That's a problem?
Yeah, and I care because
that's a good thing.
He's using too much Mr. Bubble.
So the first thing you do is say, are these guys available? So I would call my counterpart at another club and say, hey, is there any truth to this that, you're interested in trading this guy? And if they said yes, then I got to share a little anecdote with you. But if they said yes, then you begin to think about what the guy would be worth. And I'll get to that equation in a second. But that, I had that discussion with a GM who was a close friend one time, and because there was a rumor that, the pro personnel person came to me and said, there's a rumor that so-and-so might be available. I said, Is that true? Would they possibly move him? And he said, well, I don't know, but we should follow up. And I said, well, my counterpart's a good friend. Let me call him. So I called him and I said, listen, you might think I've lost my marbles here, but are you thinking about moving so-and-so? He said, you better go find your marbles because they are lost. Why would we trade him? Because the agent demanded a trade. Have you lost? Yeah. He said, you've lost your marbles. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, exactly.
I said, excuse me. Right. I had a very bad moment.
Yes, exactly. I tripped on some marbles.
Yeah.
My brain is too small to digest, this large truth that you would make such a mistake. That's point one.
Right.
But if they said, look, we'd move him for the right price, and the answer is, the question is, what do you think is appropriate? And they'll give you an opening offer. And let's just say that the opening offer was for Debo Samuel was a 1 and a 2 in this year's draft. First thing you then, this is where the draft comes in. First thing you do is say, well, okay, what is the number of our pick? Let's assume for argument's sake that we're the Jets, and I think they have 3 and 10, if I'm not mistaken.
They do.
So you would say, first of all, we're not giving 3 for Debo Samuel. And then the question then is, would you give 10 for him? And now that begets further questions such as, what is his injury history? It's not good. 2, is he a good route runner? Can he dominate outside? The answer is probably not. 3, is he a combination player, a guy who can play in the slot principally, a guy who you can move around, a guy you can hand the ball off to, a guy who's really good running after the catch? The answer to that is yes. And then the question is, okay, what would you give for that guy? Certainly not, in my mind, the 10th pick in the draft with an injury history. And then the follow-on question, the most important one, is he's not coming. You're not giving that up for a 1-year rental. No. He wants a new contract. That's why he wants to be traded. No one wants to be traded because A, they don't like the city they're playing in. B, they don't like the coach. C, they don't like how they're being used in the offense. And you can keep on going through every letter of the alphabet. And the answer is always no, 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 no. It's always about money. He wants a new contract. So the bottom line is, what does he want? And as happened in the Houston case, what's happening these days is that you go back to the club and say, well, we'd offer X, Y, or Z. And if you come to agreement on that, then they say, well, okay, now you can talk to the agent and see if the agent's demands are what you can live with. And that frequently, the answer to that frequently is no. So
yeah.
That's what goes on, but it's only peripheral to the draft in the sense that, you know, what do I have to give up and what do I have to pay the guy? And generally speaking, although this didn't happen in the case of Deshaun Watson, generally speaking, the more you have to pay the guy, the less you're willing to give up in terms of draft cap.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Otherwise, you take a double hit.
Right. Bill, you're taking a double hit. Right.
Hey, Bill, macro trend-wise, real quick, do you see like the trend in terms of the receiver contracts becoming more and more expensive, that this will push more receivers into the first round so that you can get that fifth-year option, knowing that that could be a position that theoretically could be, you know, at $35 million a year 2 years from now?
That's a consideration that only comes after you have determined that the guy has a first round grade, or if he's below a first round grade, that you feel comfortable that he's going to make a contribution to your team right away. You would not even think about it unless the grade was concomitant.
Okay. So that's something that, you know, we probably shouldn't be super, super, super stressed about. So in terms of other things related,
well, let me just add, okay, the reason that quarterbacks get taken at the bottom of the first is because those are developmental players and it takes a while for them to develop. And so the fifth year is rather important with them because you're getting, you know, you got a chance to recoup your investment. It takes them a while to develop. Other than that, no other position comes into, at least in my mind, comes into play there.
All right. Before we wrap up today, we got a super fun question from Shane Bogan, avid listener of the show. And Bill, you'd probably love his photo on Twitter. It's very anti-Patriots. He had crazy dumb question, but talking about schemes got me thinking about, why do some coordinators stay in the box and others on the field? Is it preference or strategy?
It's really preference in my experience. On the one hand, you have guys that really want to concentrate on calling the game and want quiet and you know, an atmosphere of where they're not distracted by anything. And guys like that, and I was that way actually when I coached. I didn't like a lot of chatter on the phone anyway. So they're into the game plan. They're seeing it clearly. They're able to discuss with the quality control people next to them what the trends are and what the tendencies are quietly without a lot of fuss and bother and people getting emotional and stuff and even the crowd noise getting in the way. And so it's their preference to be up there. Other guys like to be on the sideline because they like to look the players in the eye. If there's a correction to be made, they like to do it up close and personal, you know, not using an intermediary or not putting the player on the ring down phone. It's just a matter of preference.
Very cool. All right. Well, in 30 seconds, anything in particular you're looking forward to in the draft coming up next week?
Well, I think I'm anxious to see who goes in the top five because I think we could see some interesting I think we could see some interesting choices there, because there are, as always, there are people that the gurus have in the top five that I'm hearing from other GMs aren't quite there. And as you may remember, it was a surprise that San Diego took the Oregon quarterback where they did. I think that was six.
Yep.
And how did that work out?
Worked out pretty good.
I think so.
You think there's any chance we don't see an edge rusher defensive end with the first overall pick?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think there's a chance. Yeah, sure. Right. It could be a trade. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Look at this. Could be a pretty good TV event this year.
Yeah, I guess you better tune in after all.
All right, as always, if you have questions for us, please hit us up on Twitter at IFBillPolian, and we will be sure to hit them on the show. All right, enjoy the draft, guys.
Yep, absolutely.
Enjoy the draft. Have fun.
Draft away.